Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dojo Talks. Today we have an esteemed guest, Chess Numbers, aka Ty Pruce Zimmerman, and he's going to help explain to us what this FIDE rating change is. And let me just put it in layman's terms first, because I got a lot to say, even if I don't understand it. So the main piece is there's going to be this rating compression. Now, first of all, backdrop. The claim is that there has been extreme rating deflation across the FIDE rating system. That's going to be one of the points of contention, is how severe was it actually? But to address this supposed deflation, what the first thing is going to happen is that a 1,000 rated player is going to turn into a 1,400 rated player, and then all the way up to 2,000, people are going to get a boost.
Hold on, back up, Jesse. This has happened already. People have gained.
This has happened already.
Rating, yes. Yeah, as of March 1st, which was two days ago.
Right. So 1900 ELO goes to 1940 ELO, and then everybody above 2000 stays the same. Okay. There's also, and Ty's going to help us explain this to us, there's also a thing where people who get, when they get their provisional rating, they get boosted even a little higher than they would normally be according to the old system. So I have been shouting at this for weeks, and I might be like the crazy old man who doesn't actually understand what's going on. That's why we thought it would be helpful to bring on somebody who knows stats really well. So we thought we'd begin with Ty, aka Chess Numbers, follow him on Twitter. Ty could give us a quick charitable interpretation of why this makes sense. Welcome, Ty.
Thank you for having me. Simply put, the rating system has been broken and is getting more broken. ELO is designed, right, to predict the results between players. A certain rating gap directly translates on the rating tables to a percentage score that the higher rated player is supposed to have versus the lower rated player. And what Jeff Sonas observed is that over the last decade or a little more, lower rated players are winning more often than they're supposed to according to that table at every rating band. And when you look year over year, the gap between where the results are supposed to be and where the actual results are, that gap is growing. So when we talk about rating deflation, we don't just mean that people's ratings are getting lower, but that we can still assume, hey, ELO's relative, it doesn't matter what the number is, all that matters is the difference. The rating deflation that we've seen, and it's especially been extreme in the lower rating bands, which will explain some of why the compression was done the way it was done, but it's expanding, it's dragging people's ratings down faster than the formula can adjust for, to where those ratings are actually getting stretched away from each other. So according to the FIDE rating tables, if you are 600 points worse than someone, you're supposed to score like 2%. And in most of the rating bands under 2000, when you look at all the games that are played worldwide, when actual players that are say 1200 are playing 1800s or anywhere where there's that 600 point gap, the lower rated players aren't scoring 2%. They were in 2012 scoring like 8%, and they are now scoring like 15%. So the ratings have been being deflated faster as they go down the list, to where people are actually stretching away from each other and the results are fundamentally not matching the tables of how they're supposed to, and the rating gaps, which are supposed to mean the same thing across everywhere within the ELO system, those gaps are no longer meaning what they're supposed to. So that is what deflation means in this context, and that is what this is designed to fix. The reason for the compression is to take those ratings that have been stretched out and just push them back together, to try to put the players at a point where the new gaps, now that the compression has happened, will hopefully come close to reflecting the actual skill differences between the players. we want people who are 300 points lower than someone to score whatever the table says you should score 300 points lower. And that wasn't happening before. The compression by itself is actually not enough to fully fix it. Sona said that mathematically, if you wanted to actually put the skill levels at the appropriate distance from each other, you'd probably have had to bring the thousands all the way up to 1600. We only brought them up to 1400 with the compression. That is why there are other pieces to it as well that are going to change how initial ratings are calculated. But that is the problem that it's designed to fix and why this compression was the solution, because the deflation has actually stretched the ratings out. So the compression is meant to put them back where they're supposed to be to make the relative differences accurate.
Okay. So yeah, we have a lot of questions.
I bet you do. That is the intent.
Okay. And actually, let me address one question in chat because this is very important. The question is, why is this important? And it's extremely important because a couple things from my naive perspective. One is, what kind of inflation is this going to lead to? For example, is everyone going to now be a GM? Well, that's a question for me. Does this mean like the top players are now going to go up to 3,000 and 3,100 ratings? That's a big question for me. Are we going to lose the perspective where, you know, there was Fischer was had a peak of 2780, 1972, and is that was something that was kind of translatable? But if people are going to go up to 3,000, the comparison is going to get thrown off completely, right? And also, I've never understood why the FIDE rating system, why we have all these national rating systems and not just one international rating system. If it went down to zero, oh my God, we could do away with the USCF rating system. Oh my God, that would solve so many other problems. We could just get rid of like the USCF having control of that local rating system. So those are the reasons why there's, I think, a lot at stake in this proposal. Right. Kosi, you had a question. I have thousands of questions.
Yeah, tons of questions. Okay, well, okay. Actually, a really basic one is, why doesn't the rating system just start at zero? And if I understood you correctly, you were just saying that, now the minimum FIDE rating, they bumped it up from 1,000 to 1,400. You were saying they should have even done it to 1,600 is the minimum FIDE rating, which is wild. Yeah, why can't it just start at zero, which I feel like most people would think is a natural, you know, way.
Yeah, so first of all, I wasn't saying that they should have brought the minimum up to 1600 necessarily. The choice to keep a floor and to bring the floor up when they did the compression is a sort of a separate piece. I was just saying that in terms of the actual rating compression to bring the relative differences, they should, if they had turned thousands into 1600s and the same type of linear adjustment, that would have actually brought the rating differences in line with the actual over the board results we've seen. But in terms of a rating floor, that is actually, I don't have a super strong argument for that. I think Sonus's argument, as I understand it, is that the gradual lowering of the rating floor pretty clearly aligns with the deflation we've been seeing, and it seems pretty causative. Backing up, the biggest cause of this deflation is that players are, after they get their initial rating, improving too fast. Some improvement is expected, and the system can handle that. A player gets better, they play better than their rating, they gain points, their rating goes up. But if you get your initial rating at your initial, that's accurate to your initial level, and then immediately improve 400, 500 points worth of strength, and then start playing, the gaps between your skill and your rating, it can't keep up. So you end up playing too many games while underrated before your rating catches up with your skill, if ever. And so that's what's creating this gap. That's where the stretching is coming in, is too many people at the bottom of the system playing too many games while they are too deeply underrated, to the extent that the system cannot handle that stress. And lower rated players who are actively improving, especially if we're talking about like lower rated kids, they improve much faster than higher rated players. So if there's a higher floor and people have to wait a little bit longer and be a little bit stronger before they join the pool, then they're more likely to join the pool at a rating that can go up steadily, but not so rapidly that it starts breaking the system like we've had. So that is the reason for a floor, as I understand it. I'm not convinced that that doesn't mean you can't have a floor. And there's some interesting, one of the most interesting rebuttals to this proposal that I saw proposed not having a floor and an alternative way of adjusting the rating calculations that I think might have to be outside the scope of today's conversation. There's too much to cover, but I don't personally agree that a floor is completely necessary, but I think the idea is to just try not to bring in people who are improving, who are at that phase of their chess career where they're improving so fast that the system just cannot keep up, because that's what's been stretching the ratings out, according to Sonis.
Okay. Let me throw something in here. So let's imagine that there were a million Indian kids, and during the pandemic, they were all playing online. They were getting really good. And then once the pandemic started softening, these kids started playing a bunch of tournaments. They're playing against each other, so their ratings aren't going up. And then they just start eating away at everyone else's rating because they're not moving up really, but they're just destroying. The tables are all wrong because they're rated 1,000, let's say, and they're playing these 1,800s and they're knocking them out way more often than we would expect them to. Okay, that part I get. But wouldn't the system eventually recalibrate after all of that initial deflation?
It would if there wasn't a continued and steady influx of more and more of those new players. What we're seeing at this point is that even after play has resumed post-pandemic, it wasn't just kids that weren't playing during the pandemic and were improving. It's the continued steady growth of the game. We're still seeing every month more and more new players joining the pool who are underrated and going to be, and then are going to continue having these trajectories. So it didn't stop.
So what you're saying is we need to stop growing the game, basically. Everyone needs to pause on growing the game until we figure out like what's
exactly
going on.
Then the ratings will be, then the ratings can stabilize.
Okay, so part of the argument is it's not just the bunch of Indian kids. It's the fact that we're having a higher rate of growth than we did in previous decades.
Yeah, and one of the things that is one of the charts that Sonis has shows the number of players in different rating bands, like year over year, over several years. And you can see in the lower ratings, just massive increase in the number of players down there. And many of those lower rated players come in dramatically underrated and drive this effect further and further.
Also, it's really it's really not just the Indian kids. I just want to say, like, in Spain, it was kids from Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan. Like, they all had killers that are just, that were, like, way underrated. Just insane.
Yeah, and one thing that Sonis's report didn't ever break down is regional impacts. He didn't include nationality as a variable in any way. He just looked at all the thousands together, which includes the kids rated 1,000 in India and the kids rated 1,000 anywhere else, and lumped everyone together. And that was actually the other key point in that same rebuttal that I found to be the most interesting. It talked about two things, the rating floor and those regional pools, that are the sort of probably the two pieces of the puzzle that this proposal doesn't address.
Right.
And I do think that those regional rating pools are a gigantic issue that won't be made worse by this particular rating compression situation, but isn't helped either. So that remains probably the biggest problem. If this fixes one piece of the deflation. If it succeeds exactly as intended, that would that those regional rating pools will remain the next biggest problem within the overall rating system.
So you're saying India will continue to be like super underrated and just an issue for everyone else, basically.
For every player in that Indian pool that is able to go travel abroad and get their rating to start catching up with their skill level to some extent, how many are still playing in that same pool against each other while they're all getting better? So there's nothing in this proposal that in any way helps that pool stop being completely underrated.
Mm-hmm. I also had a question of just the size of this thing. Like, how many points were just injected into the overall pool? Because it's like hundreds of thousands of players, right?
Over 300,000 players got points, somewhere between 1 and 400 points each. So,
mm-hmm. So we're looking at like tens of millions of points, millions of points.
Yeah,
this is your task.
340,000.
Actually, we can
probably 10, 20 million points. Sounds about right off the top of my head.
Well, if we have 300,000, that's what we were saying, 300,000. And if we say it was a point spread of 400, so then roughly, right, we're looking at 60 million points have just been injected into the system. Does that make sense? I just multiplied 300,000 by 200 as a rough guess. Yeah, 60 million points, boss. 60. Are you insane, Fide? What are you doing?
So the
what
giant
are you doing?
The giant question about whether that's a problem or not is how badly underrated were the players collectively who got those points? Because if 60 million points were shoved into the system to players who were accurately rated, and now they're just going to give those points to the people who can farm them, then giant problem. But if those players were legitimately underrated by 50 million points, even if we want to argue it was too much, like if there was a deep level of collective underratedness, we gave points to them and now their ratings are accurate and it's a one-time change. So that would be the scenario if those players were as underrated as Sonus's analysis suggested, they won't necessarily be farmed. Right now, those lower rated players have been farming the higher rated players and just insufficiently to catch up to their skills. So this just gets it to where, in theory, by intent, results might actually match what they're supposed to be going forward. And the higher rated players can stop losing rating to the lower rated players because the gaps have shrunk, but they may not just farm all of these injected points, and so the points might not drift upwards too significantly.
Yeah, here's hoping. I am no longer rooting against higher rated players. against all underdogs.
One of the things that this amazing 60 million number that just is killing me is It seems like this proposal assumes that the rate of growth that we've seen, by the way, the greatest rate of growth chess has ever seen, way bigger than the post-Fisher boom, way bigger, right? That rate of growth is not going to taper off, because I assume it will, especially with OTB, yep. Right? So I don't understand. Like, I still don't understand, like, why wouldn't the system take care of itself? You know, now we got to put these 60 million, like, was it bad? Was it terrible perhaps in India for a while? Might be, but you know, give me a break. 60 million points is going to destroy the system.
Well, I don't know, Jesse. I mean, it keeps coming, right? And if anything, it's gotten worse with the kids. Like, kids have always been around, but it's like gotten worse. I mean, they're just accelerating so much faster now. I mean, in the past you had, I feel like you had like a few like prodigies, right, in every generation, but it wasn't that many. Now it's like every other kid, it's like 1900 before they're 10 years old. They're like just, it's really gone. I mean, it's very, it's basically it's accelerating, I feel.
But the thing about, okay, this is the other thing I don't. But okay, so the argument where you say, like, Kai was talking about the 600 point difference, to my mind, it's always the 400 point difference. So the 400 point difference says that you get 1 point out of 10 if you're 400 points below, right? That could be two draws, that could be a win. Now, the tables might be screwed up. That to me is a legitimate argument. That part I actually understand. But to say that the kids have gotten better, I don't like that, because what we're then saying is the standard of chess might have simply improved. And that would be fine if the standard of chess improved. And you could say something like, well, 2200 today is way more strong than 2200 30 years ago. That would be fine. It just means that the standard of play got stronger across the board, right? Yeah, so I still feel like it's to reset itself.
So
Okay. Okay,
let's
I'm
talk
sorry.
the 400 point difference, because there's a nice little graph in Sonus's report. The one game out of 10 is about right. The table actually says the high rated player is supposed to score 92%.
Okay.
It between 2008 and 2012, when there was a gap of about 400 points in a game, the higher rated player actually only scored 87%. From
Okay.
23 to 2016, that dropped to 85%. From 27 to 2020, that dropped to 83%. And in 2021 through 2023, that dropped to 80%. So that player who's 400 points better never actually was scoring 92%, but they went from they're supposed to score 92, they were scoring 87, then they were scoring 85, then they were scoring 83, now they're scoring 80. That is the deflationary effect that we're concerned about here. There was a question in chat, how can everyone be underrated? And it's because we're not just lowering people's ratings, we're lowering people's ratings relative to their skill level, and we're doing it faster at lower levels. So gap that rating gap that is supposed to represent a specific skill level gap is actually getting stretched out. So that is how we're ending up in a situation where everyone really is, and it's not actually everyone, but like in the aggregate, these rating bands are genuinely underrated versus higher rating bands collectively and as a whole. So that is why the compression is meant to try to squeeze them back together so that those players that are 400 points better than someone after the compression will hopefully score their 90% again, or at least their 87% again, and not their 80%.
And one of the things that kills me about the paper is it doesn't try to estimate how much this is going to change all of the traditional benchmarks. For example, at the moment, right, we have two players over 2800. For the most part, the last couple decades, that's kind of been where it's at. There's been one or two people over 2800 at any given moment, right? And one of the reasons I'm so skeptical about the deflation is if it was as extreme as the paper suggests, we would have seen it already at the top, but we're not really seeing it at the top. And to my, it's a combined ecosystem. I get it. I get it. It's happening first at the bottom, but little fishes eat big fishes and it ends up having a big, common effect. Okay.
Yes.
So one of the things that I don't understand about this, and maybe you can speak this, Ty, is like, what should we now expect? Should we expect the top players with this, what did I say, 30 a gazillion points? 60 million points added to the system? With 60 million points added to the system, it just seems like, of course, there's going to be somebody at 3100 in a half a second.
Wait, hold on. Before
So
we get
what?
to that, can I just ask, like, so right now I would say is the best time to play if you're under 2000 or like slightly above, because you have a good chance of running into one of these boosted players that maybe got some undeserved rating points. So we have multiple questions on this. How long until the inflation reaches 2200s? how long until it reaches someone like maybe me and Jesse, like around 2400? And then, yeah, will this help Magnus reach 3000?
Oh, don't tell me I just cut out.
I can hear you.
We're here.
I'm back. Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. You guys froze for a second. My internet's occasionally spotty. You know? But so how long till the inflation reaches up? Yes, that is a perfect segue. And we could talk both about the 2200 level players and at the top. Mm-hmm. The short answer is not immediately. Magnus probably isn't going to hit 3000 because of this, even if it has the most dire effects we can imagine, because it's going to have the effects are going to take too long to get to the top. If this puts someone at 3000, it's more likely to be a Ferrugia or an Abdusatorov than it is Magnus that ends up being the guy who gets there first. Mm-hmm. It isn't going to be immediate. And my biggest concerns that are not addressed in the Sonus report are about the long term, not the short term. So I want to talk a little about how he did this and how what his methodology was.
Okay.
He took the data of like every FIDE rated game going back to, I think, 2012 and put in all the different rating rules changes that had happened since then and built this model that could recalculate the ratings from scratch following FIDE's formulas month by month. And he ran it using the real formulas and it worked. It got him the same ratings at the end point in 2023 that players actually had. So he had an accurate model, essentially redoing all of FIDE's calculations for over from a decade. And then using that model, he plugged in what happens if these changes had been implemented 1 year ago or 5 years ago. And so that gives us a sense of what we should expect to see in the next year, the first year after they're implemented, and in the first 5 years. And he saw essentially 1 year out deflation being still happening, but happening slower than it did in real life. And when he put these changes in 5 years ago, he showed by 2023, deflation had gone to zero. Things had sort of leveled out. And he didn't look at, or he didn't publish the results for the top 10 players. He didn't say what happens to Magnus's rating if we put these rules in 1 year ago or 5 years ago. But he did talk about how many players exist at different rating levels. And this actually is one of the problems he observed. And it's a little bit more speculative than some of his other data, whether it's truly a problem. But one thing he observed looking at the real life numbers is that as the number of total players in the pool has skyrocketed, and as we're going from 100,000 to 400,000 total FIDE rated players and way more players down in the lower rating bands, the actual number of players rated 2200 in the world hasn't increased, not at all. The number of titled players is not increasing, and he felt that was weird. With that many new players, he figured the percentage of players that reach titled strength should be somewhat consistent, and that if there's four times as many total players in the pool, we should be seeing an increase in the number of people that reach 2200 eventually, an increase in the number of people that might reach IM or GM. And that wasn't happening. And that was part of his argument for that deflation is happening. And in his simulations, he did show a pretty significant boost 5 years after the rules go into effect in the number of players that would have hit 2200, still very, very minimal in the number of players at like GM that would hit GM plus level. So over the first 5 years or so, for this to trickle up to the titled ranks is going to happen slowly. It probably isn't helping someone who wants to try to make GM in the next few years get there any easier. If there's effects, it'll be in the long run. My concern reading his papers, while I largely agree with a lot of what he a lot of what he wrote, and a lot of it made sense, my concern is there was no analysis of what happens if this went in 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So my concern is long term. This is an inflationary pressure meant to stabilize the system, meant to offset deflation. And one of the numbers that I found interesting, looked at the number of players rated 2600 plus. This was the closest he came to really digging into elite play. And under the current real life system, we've been the number of 2600 plus players has been dropping by like 15 players a year for a while. We have fewer and fewer 2600 plus players in the world year over year right now. And in real life in 2023, we lost 19 of them. If these rules had gone into effect in 2022, instead of losing 19, we would have lost 15. So year one, his model is showing that we can put these rules into effect, and 1 year later, deflation is still there, but it's a little bit less. If these rules went into effect in 2017, then by 2023, we would have gained one 2600 level player. So that's where he's showing, like, at the top level, putting these rules in today means about 5 years from now, deflation at the top level should stabilize, which is probably enough because we haven't seen, like Jesse said earlier, dramatic deflation at the top level. Another speculative component of his whole report was that he thought that was going to get worse. He felt deflation in the lower end of the system has been there for a decade, and it's been working its way upwards. And if we didn't do anything, we've seen hints of it at the top. It's a little harder to hit 2800. A few players have lost some average rating. The top 10 has trickled down a little. He thought that was going to get much more dramatic over, say, the next 5 years if we didn't do this now. So he did think that deflation would eventually work its way to the top, and that what we have seen so far might be the tip of the iceberg. And his model suggests that now, with this, with these new rules in place, it might, instead of continuing to deflate at the top level, stabilize in about 5 years. And then he doesn't say anything about what happens afterwards. So again, my question is, what will it look like? What will that ecosystem look like in 10 years? But no one's going to hit 2900 tomorrow because of this. But when these you know, 19, 20-year-olds, this current elite crop out here, when they're 30, that's outside of anything he modeled. And so that's the spot where, if we see a new rating record set, if someone breaks Carlson's record and makes that run at 2900, that's when it would happen, most likely. And if it happens then and there's no further changes, that would mean inflation is just steadily built into the system. It would mean there was a long-term overcorrection. And if someone hits 2900 10 years from now and nothing has changed, then yeah, someone might hit 3000 15 or 20 years from now, and so on and so on. I do suspect that they'll be like watching for that. If someone starts making a run at 2900, some of these changes might get rolled back in the opposite direction. FIDE likes to tinker, so it probably doesn't make sense to take rules they passed one day and say this will probably be in effect in 20 years. They're going to tinker again because they're FIDE.
That's
But
interesting.
yeah, I'd say the inflation effects at the elite level, I do think might be real, because if it's reversing the deflation so gradually, I don't see why that trend would stop. But they're long term, not short term, if you trust the model that all this was built off of.
Yeah, that's cool. So it was almost like a prophylactic measure against further deflation. And so yeah, I want to ask about the I guess like the rate of provisional play. But I also found it interesting that you're saying that there's fewer and fewer 2600 grandmasters, which I didn't realize. But yeah, middle class getting squeezed as usual, which is interesting. We're going to try to counteract that. So did they make changes to players improving? Like, do you now gain rating faster if you have a good performance?
They did not. And that would have been one of the alternative approaches to this, because it would have been maybe an even more dramatic change in mathematically, but felt less dramatic to the public if they had switched something like a Glico rating system that doesn't just give players a static K factor based on their age and doesn't just say everyone has a K factor of 40, but actually accounts for inactivity. And this is what all the online servers use, right? If you're playing constantly, you might be plus or minus 5 points every game. But if you let your account sit dormant for a year and come back, you might gain 150 points with your if you win your first game back. And the USCF uses a version of Glico where, so if you haven't played in a while, your rating is just assumed to be less likely to be accurate. So the until you so you get more dramatic adjustments. And something like that could have maybe fixed a lot of these problems without having to change everyone's rating. But I mean, there's a deep history of these of FIDE using actual ELO ratings in the literal sense of Professor ELO's actual formulas and suggestions that from when the rating system was first implemented. And so mathematically changing to a genuinely different rating system would have been, I think, more dramatic. But it would have been dramatic completely behind the scenes, and probably, and so that might have been a different way to try to approach this. But as it is, no, they didn't change anything about how players gain and lose rating in terms of K factors or anything like that. The only change to how players gain and lose rating is they put the 400 point rule back in, and that was just reversing a change from 2022. Used to be before that, and it is again, anytime you play someone rated more than 400 points away from you, it's treated like the gap was only 400 points. And this allows, even if you're playing much lower rated players, you can still gain points in every game. If you need to gain 8 points in a month, even if you're rated 2800, you could do it by beating 9 1500s. You don't have to play 2400s
This
to
is
do it.
purely
Nearly
hypothetical, yeah.
hypothetically.
One wanted to, yeah, qualify.
And there's that hypothetical might be an example of an abuse of it, but it helps offset the issue of these players overperforming. Because right now, if a player tried to play a whole bunch of games, 1,000 points down before this change, like they could have lost a lot of points because there's in that crowd, they're going to run into enough underrated players that they're going to drop some more draws than the formula says they should drop, maybe even lose a game here or there and lose a lot of points in the process. So by putting the 400 point rule in, it protects those higher rated players from a really badly underrated player completely tanking them in one game. So they put the 400 point rule back in, and that's the only change to how ratings progress as once you're in the pool. But the other thing they changed is the initial rating calculation, because used to be just your initial rating is based on your performance in those first games, but performance in one tournament is hugely variable. And what Sonas found is players that came in with really low initial ratings almost always gained points in their next tournament because that the vast majority of them just got that low rating because of unlucky play in their first event, not because that was their true skill. And similarly, players that came in with particularly high ratings almost always lost points in the next event because it was the variance of results in one tournament that was pushing people away from their true skill level. So now, when you get your initial rating, assuming you've played enough actual real games to qualify, when they calculate that initial rating, they add in two extra hypothetical draws against a hypothetical 1800 opponent to sort of bring your initial rating a little closer to just an average point and make it so players that were coming in underrated because they had a bad first tournament will be less underrated, and players that were coming in overrated because they scored one random upset because someone that and came in above their skill level, they'll be a little less overrated initially. So all the initial ratings are being dragged towards 1800 by pretending there were two extra games that didn't that are added in. And so that's the other big change to initial ratings. But that but after you have that initial rating, the 400 point rule is the only difference, and it's not really different because it was it's the same as it was until 2022.
Gotcha. So it sounds like it'll take time until this possibly filters, and if it filters up, it's just going to be to counteract the deflation that we've seen from the last several years.
In theory.
So it'll give us a chance, Jesse. It'll just give us another chance to get back.
It'll give you a chance. Maybe you're going to become a GM, but the problem is then everybody's going to become a GM. Then what is it worth if everyone gets to become a GM? Oh my
God. Nah, it's not going to be. It's not going to be. I think it'll,
let me just do a layman's understanding, Ty, because I feel like this thought that I'm having is going to be on other people's minds too. So you're saying it's going to take a while, but let me just put it in my simplistic questioning. Okay, here we go. So when I play an open tournament, I generally will play, it's very common, I'll play like a 1900, 2000 round, right around there, first round. And I'll say at least what it feels like is that those 1900s are stronger than it used to be. Okay, maybe. Okay. But here's the thing that I don't understand when we say it's going to take a long time. Those 1900s will be feeding off of, so I'm not going to get any immediate points from the 1900 because the 1900 just got a minor boost with this rating shift, right? But the 1900s, and let's say in the next couple months, are going to be eating up loads of fishy fish points from those beneath them. And then that 1900 will then very quickly be well over 2000. And then I'm going to be playing that guy. And then me taking that person's points, it's going to be much faster than I think. I just, to me, it's like same thing as when you print money. You print $60 million. It's coming into the system. There's no way around it.
So what's been happening? You said those 1900s seem a lot stronger than before. Have you been dropping some points in those games?
A little bit, sure, yeah. I don't doubt the idea. I don't doubt the idea at all that 1900s are stronger than they used to be. That I don't have any problem with that, you know.
So the question isn't, are 1900s today stronger than 1900s a decade ago were?
Right.
The question is, the gap between 2400s and 1900s today, is that the same gap as a decade ago?
Right.
And the FIDE rating table says that 1900s should score like 2% when they play 2400s.
Right.
And a decade ago, when 1900s played 2400s, they were actually scoring like 4%. So a little better than they were supposed to. On average, the 2400s might lose a small fraction of a point every time they have to play down like that. But it wasn't too bad. In 2021 to 2023, when 1900 and 1999 players, all of them cooked together as a group, all the games where they played against players rated 24 to 2499, they scored 10% versus the expected two.
They've just lost all respect. You know, I mean, it's like a generational issue. No respect anymore.
So you are right that you will do better rating-wise playing those 1900s now than you did before because there are points coming upwards to you.
Right.
But it might not be enough that you actually gain rating. It might just be that you stop bleeding rating when you play them. So the thing is, there are a lot of different pieces of the whole rating formula and the whole ecosystem that have different conflicting effects. There are inflationary effects in the system. There are deflationary effects in the system. And the question is, how do they all balance? This new change is absolutely by design an inflationary effect, but it is not in and of itself just flipping a switch to we have inflation now. Because the ecosystem we had, the deflationary effects were much, much stronger. And so deflation was happening. When 2400s played 1900s, they were on average losing rating points pretty quickly because they were scoring 90% when the table said they're supposed to score 98%. And that was costing you guys a lot every time you had to play a 1900. Mm. And you might have some, you might be thinking about some specific cases of real life examples of that.
I remember every single one.
You might be thinking about that right now. This isn't going to change it to now when you play the 1900s, you're gaining a ton because you can farm them because they have all these undeserved points that they're farming from below. But it might stop the bleeding. That's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to stop the bleeding. You're supposed to be able to get back to scoring because the players that were 1900 that were taking those points off of you, they'll maybe jump up to 2100. Yes. Because they're supposed to be 2100 because that's how they're scoring 10% against you. Mm-hmm. And the players and the new 1900s that used to be rated lower, they might be players who you can actually score at least 95, if not your proper 98 against. And so when you see someone with a 1900 next to their name at your next tournament, they won't be as good as the 1900s that have taken all those points from you. And so you might be able to actually perform closer to your expectation. It's supposed to stop the bleeding.
Yeah. Also, I think I play better, you know, when my opponent's rating is equivalent to their strength. Because part of the problem is that we tend to underestimate players if they're like way lower rated. And so, yeah. So if they're 2100, yeah. I want them to be 2100 rating. So I know ahead of time.
Right. You have who this, I'm dealing how with. You flavors. You have this idea of how you would play versus a 2100 that might be different from what you might try against a 19. So yeah. When someone rolls in with that 19 next to their name, but they're actually 2100 strength.
Yeah. Although these days, to be fair, I mean, I feel like the gap is even wider. I mean, it's like,
it is.
It's all very different.
And I will say that is where, if we go back to Sonus sort of mentions that this compression by itself isn't maybe even enough. The compression is going to shrink those gaps, but on average, those 1900s might land at 2050, and they might really be like 2100 strength or 2150 strength. So there might still be a gap, and you might not get to your 98% that the table says you should be at. But if you're at 90%, you might get back to 95 with this compression. It's supposed to get you the compression of the thousands to 1400 and everything else from there up to the 2000s not getting anything. That will fix about 2/3 of the stretched out thing where the rating differentials no longer mean what they used to mean, according to Sonus. So that's what the impact is meant to be. And then the other third of that gap will gradually be fixed with the change to initial ratings. So the players stop coming in so dramatically underrated so often. And then that's sort of the long-term effect that is meant to get it back there. So yeah, this is probably not, unless he miscalculated, right? I mean, if he miscalculated and overshot and put too many points into the system, then maybe it will really flow up. But he thinks he didn't put in enough to truly fix it with just the compression. And so he thinks this is not going to make 2400 suddenly be able to farm a ton of points off lower rated players who are suddenly overrated. You'll just stop losing so many points to underrated players. That's the goal.
I'll take it. So we should probably move on to I think the topic that everyone's most curious about, which is what do we do the dojo training program, because we based our system off of the FIDE ratings that existed before, and we have this chart that we slaved over for hours converting FIDE ratings to USCF, to chess.com, to Lee Chess. And it was always based on like the kind of conventional logic. USCF rating is generally about 100 points higher than FIDE rating. Chess.com is inflated above that. And then Lee Chess is like astronomical. So how will this affect things? I guess for us, I think the USCF to FIDE is probably the most interesting comparison right now.
Certainly at the
Let me just put a little quick question on top of that. Is One of the things that's confusing to me about the whole deflation claim with FIDE is, wouldn't we also observe the exact same phenomenon, not only in USCF rating deflation, but all the other national ratings?
Well, with USCF specifically, the fact that they don't use a pure ELO system, but instead they use a Glico system and also have like the bonus point formulas for overperformances. USCF has some things in their rating formula that prevent some of the deflationary effects that FIDE is
Let's
seeing.
go.
So that, again, I kind of mentioned earlier that a different approach FIDE could have taken is to try to really fundamentally change some of how they do ratings so that it can be a little more nimble. FIDE also, the thing where FIDE only calculates their ratings once a month is obviously way faster than back when it was every 6 months or even every year at the very beginning. But still, compared to an online server that updates you after every game and compared to USCF that updates you after every tournament, there are times when someone plays a bunch of tournaments in 1 month and you get kind of odd results that might not really, and you get some players that are either under or overrated because of either a really bad month or a really good month,
It's true, yeah.
where the whole thing is calculated a base instead of the first bad tournament changing the base and letting the second bad tournament drop you less. So there's a lot of things that FIDE could have considered in changing the actual math of how they calculate ratings instead of this, and they didn't go that route. They went with more of the one-time fix approach, which is very FIDE. They remember they set all the blitz rate. They realized that blitz ratings weren't lining up because people weren't playing enough blitz tournaments over the board. So they just set everyone's blitz rating to equal your classical rating minus 100 and one-time fix. And you didn't have the people that were 2700 with 1800 blitz ratings anymore. But if they're still not playing tournaments, you'll get new people that have that thing 5 years from now because they're so the FIDE likes to do these one-time fixes instead of actually changing the way they calculate things. The blitz ratings should definitely, even though they have a higher K factor than classical, it's not nearly high enough for how rarely people play Blitz and how volatile Blitz is. That's a total side conversation, but I think it's an example of FIDE preferring these one-time fixes that might make the current rating list more accurate, but it doesn't really change the calculations going forward. And I don't know if that's going to happen here. Again, it looks like the first 5 years probably will be about what are they're supposed to be, but what's going to happen in year 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I don't know yet.
Let me ask one more question, and then I promise we're going to have to get to Costa's questions, because yes, the dojo wants to know.
Yes.
When I was a kid, to order this back in the 80s, in order to get a FIDE rating, which everybody wanted to do, you had to be over 2200, right? And then throughout my life, it got successively dropped and dropped and dropped and dropped. And the original intention, I could be wrong on this, but it seemed like, okay, at 2200, you're kind of playing, let's call it international chess, because at 2300, you can get a FIDE master title. Then we can talk about IM, GM, yada, yada. Wouldn't it have been the case that if they had just kept that 2200 thing, then none of this would have happened?
Absolutely. And that goes back to the question of why have a rating floor. A very high rating floor, like 2200 or even probably 1800, I sort of off the cuff feel is probably high enough. A high rating floor prevents this from happening because by the time players are actually good enough to earn that initial rating,
Right.
they
They've stabilized.
aren't they're not improving so fast that they
Right.
can break the system. They can still improve and they can still gain their rating as they get better, but they can play enough tournaments as they're improving that the rating can keep up with their true skill. So they're not playing games while they're drastically underrated. They're improve a little, play a tournament, rating catches up, improve a little, rating catches up, because growth is just slower at that stage. We know
Right.
obviously, you know way better than I do with all your coaching experience how and your own career experience, how much harder it is for a 2200 to become 2300, how much more work, how much more time that takes than for a eager 1000 with a lot of time to commit to the game to get to 1600.
Right, right.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And just that system of having a local rating for your OTB until you get to, like, 2200 or so, and then you can graduate up to the FIDE rating. And then it doesn't really make sense that you have two 1800 ratings, a FIDE and a USCF. It's like, what's the point?
But the counterpoint to all of that, and I think the reason they wanted to lower the rating floor was, I mean, grow the game is good, right? And and people want to be able to go get a, people want to get a FIDE rating. You said, I mean, when it was 2200, those of you that were really strong, super committed, able to make a run at that, what you wanted was a FIDE rating. And lower rated players want that too. And those of us that are never going to hit anywhere near 2200, if there's a lower floor, we have the opportunity to go out there and try to get a FIDE rating. So lowering the floor had a lot of benefits for growth of the game, but there was a deep unintended consequence that has probably been sort of bubbling through the system from as early as 1993, which is the very first time they lowered that floor a little bit, long before it got all the way down to 1,000. They've been lowering it gradually.
Right.
That 2,200 was dropped in 1993. And from the moment they started dropping that floor, the lowest rated players at the bottom of the system were improving a little bit faster than the previous low rated players used to be. And there was, of course, a lot of heavy inflationary factors. And that's the other thing. Jeff Sonas wrote so much about rating inflation back around 2008, 2010, back when it was right before it hit its peak, when there was no sign of it slowing down yet, but it turned out it was about to. He never really, in all those writings, came up with a clear answer to why. And I would love to know if he has a clearer answer today of why the inflation happened through about 2010 before this kicked in. But whatever inflationary pressures were driving that existed, and then as they lowered the rating floor, that added deflationary pressures that eventually slowed it and then eventually turned the trajectory. And he thinks we were on the cusp of disaster by at this point because of that steadily growing deflation.
What would disaster look like, though? What, we just have less 2700s? What is that, the disaster that happens, I guess?
Well, the disaster is the ratings meaning less and less. Okay. If, like, right now, right, we said that, you know, these 24, when 2400s play a 1900, they've been losing 10% of the games now, when it's supposed to be two. What happens if 2400s are losing 30% of their games to 1900s? Like, if it kept growing, if that gap between what the formula expects and what's actually happening continued to grow and grow and grow,
it would eventually stabilize, though. It would eventually get back to where it was.
Maybe, or it would just continue to stretch further and further apart till it just tore itself apart. And I don't know. I'm not that. The idea that it was an impending disaster is, again, less backed up by the data and a little more speculative. But it is true that those gaps were growing. Right. So ELO has been becoming less and less accurate of a way to predict results, which is precisely what it's designed to do. So the degree to which that's disastrous, I don't know. But that was definitely what's been happening. As for the dojo ratings, definitely, I think recalculation makes a lot of sense. Certainly, USCF rating in the 1200s, what FIDE rating does that translate? That has changed dramatically.
Right.
With this new rating list, all of Sonas's analysis is in the aggregate. It's all of the 1,000s in the world versus all the 1,500s. These results are wrong, et cetera. There are individuals who got way too many points because of this. There are individuals who didn't get nearly enough. So I suspect that in the very short term, things are going to be pretty chaotic, particularly in those lower rating bands, as individual players restabilize their personal ratings as they get a chance to play more. And another part of the problem is the players in those rating bands don't, most of them don't play as often. So I don't know that it would be a good idea to try to revamp the system like today, based on the adjustment just happened. What's your new rating? It might be a good idea to let at least some games get played in those lower rating bands over the next few months before attempting a revamp. But I would say maybe after like the May rating list comes out would be a really good time to put a new survey out in the field and try to gather the updated version of that data of what do people, what are people's USCF ratings, what are their FIDE ratings, what are their Chess.com ratings, what are their LeeChess ratings right now, and probably analyze it about the same way that I did before, but I think that and but it'll come up with a very different translation because the FIDE ratings are so different. And that's one of the things about this is this compression and all this, at least short term, is going to have very minimal effect at the professional ranks. It'll take a long time for it to trickle up to whatever extent it will. But it is really dramatic in the ranks of players who are active in the dojo, and for amateur players working on our games, like we live in the spot where this rating adjustment was biggest, many of us. So yeah, the effect on the dojo's table is probably going to be dramatic, but it, I'm not confident in the data right now.
Well, let me just put it why this is so dramatic. There's two reasons why this is really dramatic for the dojo. For one, there's now, let's call it a wasteland between especially 1000 and 1400, because like what do any of the old cohorts mean between 1000 and 1400 at this point? I have no idea. And people are legitimately asking. And then further, like when you look at those cohorts, it's not everybody that had FIDE ratings in those cohorts. So some people are going to be mammothly boosted. I mean, just put this in perspective. Like you get some guy who's rated 1001, and that guy is now rated 1400. That's 400 points. Four cohorts, this guy's getting boosted. Oh, it
Yeah,
kills me.
so frame. So we have the conversion chart of, you know, this Chess.com rating is roughly equivalent to this USCF rating is roughly equivalent to this February or earlier FIDE rating. And if I were signing up for the dojo tomorrow and choosing a cohort, and I had a FIDE rating and had just gotten one of these boosts, I would probably want to use my Chess.com rapid rating to choose my cohort in the shortest of terms until we have a new table. I love that it's framed as FIDE ratings ultimately, but for people joining the dojo in the next month, I think you want to use ratings that haven't just changed drastically as the placement ratings. That's probably the safer bet. Until we can see how all of this shakes out and build a new table.
And let me tell you the other thing. There's a conspiracy going on against me. And this is the way the conspiracy is playing out. Every Thursday, I do a graduate show where I highlight the players. I go out with their games, look at what they've done. And I highlight the players who made a jump of a cohort. So the conspiracy that's being launched against me is they already know, because the dojo has been growing, they already know that it's the show's getting extreme, like 30 some people in a show, and it can be like a 4-hour show. Well, dude, they're talking about murdering me by getting like 80 people in a show, could be more, and then I'm just dead. You know, that they've killed me. They've killed me in that one show. That sounds kind of funny, but it speaks to how this thing is throwing everybody off. Like ultimately, I think the big ones for me are like just be, the let's say the titled benchmarks, like how is FIDE Master going to change IAM? But at the lower cohorts, yeah, it's just a complete mess right now. Like right now,
Yeah.
it's a complete disaster.
I'm a US player, so I don't have a FIDE rating, but like if I did have a FIDE rating and if I had been 1400 FIDE and in that cohort because of my FIDE rating, I would not ask, and I hadn't played a tournament this month, but I just gained 230 points and now I'm in the 1600 range. I wouldn't be asking to graduate
Okay.
personally. How you want to handle that with students, and if they do want to take their just mathematically modified rating and go to a different cohort, but someone who went from 1,000 to 1,400 overnight without playing a game didn't get better at chess, or at least that rating boost isn't evidence. They probably did because they're in the dojo, and everyone in the dojo is improving. Because, but like. This isn't a reason in my mind, if for me as a if as a player, to think I deserve to graduate to the next cohort. I want to get better at chess to earn that graduation.
Yeah. Also, we should say people can also just switch their cohort, so you don't have to actually click the graduate button. I would suggest, yeah, just going to your settings and then switching the cohort, because that's how you just change your level without, getting the graduation badge. And that would be because maybe there are people that are underrated, or they started with some random FIDE rating that isn't reflective of their actual strength. And I think I have seen some reports of people that are like, yeah, my new FIDE rating is now equivalent to what, is like normalized according to like LeeChessChess.com, USCF, that sort of thing. So
So
for
if
some
you're one
people,
of
it
those
might just be a better fit.
if you're one of these individuals who are the reason this adjustment happened, like if your chess.com ratings tell you should be 1400 FIDE, but you were stuck from the actual FIDE tournaments you played at 1050 and you were frustrated, why am I 1050? You're the reason this adjustment is happening. You're the player who actually was underrated. Your chess.com rating wasn't wrong. You really were a four you really were a 1400 level FIDE player, and now you have the rating. But at the individual level, the compression was based on aggregates. At the individual level, some people are underrated and some aren't. So I mean, I think ultimately you do give students a lot of freedom to choose their cohort. The ratings are guides for what cohort they should probably be in. I would certainly encourage students to not treat 400 bonus points as a reason to change cohorts in the absence of any other evidence. But if you've been in the 1000 cohort because of your FIDE rating, but the tables say your chess.com rating is more the 1400 FIDE level, and if you felt like the work in the 1000 cohort has been too easy for you, then you might be a really strong candidate for using your new FIDE rating of 1400 and saying, hey, that's actually pretty accurate. Let me move up to that cohort and see if the work here feels more like it's going to help my game. But if you felt like the work was challenging in the cohort you're in and your FIDE rating actually did already match your online ratings and you didn't really have any reason to think you were underrated, and then this happened and you suddenly got 300 points added, maybe don't jump cohorts because of those 300 points. Go earn them over the board first. So
Maybe we could just reverse the changes, because we have this like normalized FIDE rating that converts your Lee Chess to FIDE according to our system. So maybe that can now include people's live FIDE rating, where it just subtracts a certain number of points, and then that's your like normalized FIDE. So
that's
you
the
just bring
normalized
people
FIDE
back to
rating.
the original system.
Like in March right now, until people start playing games under the new ratings, in March you could actually literally just change the table to say old FIDE rating, and it probably still holds up pretty well. But once people start playing games with the new ratings, you will need a new table to sort of account for that. And I don't know how long to wait. I also know like it'd be great if you could wait a few months for people to try to play a game or a tournament or two under the new ratings and try to let the system stabilize a little for individuals before you recalculated everything. But I also know you've got Dojo 3.0 coming out very soon, so you might want to unveil the new table with it. So maybe we do need to put out the table faster, even if it might be a little less accurate because of all this.
Now, this doesn't solve our problems, but I just wanted to shout some numbers out. So one of the things that we have in the dojo, one just first of all, it's kind of interesting. As you go up the rating cohorts, you get more and more people who start using their over the board ratings, right? For example, the people in the under 1,000 cohorts are just very rarely using a local rating. You know, they're talking about their Lee Chess or their Chess.com rating. So, for example, in our 1,000 to 1,100, we just have three people FIDE. 11 to 12, we have two. You know, and then it goes four, slowly getting a little bit more. 13 then in 13, 1,400. And so 13, 1,400, you're looking at gaining, you're still gaining a substantial amount of points there. 12, go, I'm just reading up 10, 17, you know, uh-oh, this is where it's going to get hurting. 17, 18 is 24. Oh no, 18, 19 is 26. That's starting to get real. And then 19 to 2000 is 18. So those people gain less, of course. But that's where we have, unsurprisingly, the most people using FIDE as their cohort.
Yeah. And players, yeah, anywhere above about 1800 FIDE, like this changes. You got a few points if you're under 2000, but anyone 1800 plus, I think, can continue using their FIDE rating for their cohort
Yeah, a lot of them
on the
don't even
whole.
go up a cohort. If they're like 1800 or something, they would stay in the same one. It's just if you're near the cusp.
Yeah. So those hold up pretty well. And it was always true, of course, FIDE ratings still had the floor of 1,000 even before this. So anyone in the beginner cohorts below that, we put a fee, we extended the graph a little to put a FIDE number on it, on the table in the estimates. But obviously, there's not actually such a thing as a FIDE 600 even before. And so for those beginner cohorts, using the online ratings was always a better way to choose which cohort to be in, even if we named it for a FIDE rating. That wasn't what placed them there. And I would say after this change, the spot where I would recommend FIDE ratings rather than over the board, or sorry, I would recommend online ratings rather than FIDE ratings as your primary way to choose placement, I'd say that range increased. Anyone under about 1800 FIDE probably should look carefully at the very least, even if they use FIDE ratings for their cohort placement, should double check that they're choosing a placement that is consistent with their online ratings as well.
That makes sense. Yeah, we could just ask people to choose based on their online rating for the time being rather than their FIDE rating, which won't
And
affect a
lower.
ton of people if you're saying like under 1800. And that makes sense to me because I mean, they're probably playing a lot online. If they have USCF, obviously they can use that as well.
Yeah,
So,
that's a good placement one because that hasn't been
or
dramatically changed
ECF
this
or
month.
yeah, CFC or any other, right?
And just for the time being, use those other ratings, whether it's online or a non-FIDE over the board rating, use those to translate into old FIDE and define the cohorts by old FIDE until there's room to do a revamp.
How about this as just a quick idea is that, like, we could say if you're 1800 plus, you can change your, you know, use the new FIDE, and then we can start saying things like, okay, in June, if you're 1700, you can use it. If you know, in July, if you're 1600, and then so we could slowly like build it back in or something like that to being the preferred metric. So if you're just listening to this, you have no idea. At the dojo, you can choose which rating system you want to be your preferred one, because if you play like very little over the board and you play a bunch on chess.com, well, you should use the chess.com one, obviously, right? But just in terms of choosing that preferred one, maybe we could gradually phase it in like that.
Yeah. Well, let's save
Yeah.
the brainstorming for
All
later. I
right,
mean,
all
this is
right.
still
Yeah. Yeah, I would
the
definitely say in the short term, especially at the lower rating ranges, strongly encourage people to choose cohorts based on online rating and the names of the cohorts being FIDE rating num being FIDE rating like the 1000 to 1200 cohort. Just make it clear that that's 1000 to 1200 old FIDE.
Yeah, just an honorary name. That makes sense. Ty, Chess Numbers, thank you very much for
Yeah.
joining us. That was super enlightening and helpful. Once again, people should follow Ty. He's at Chess Numbers on Twitter. Are you on anywhere else? Do you have anything else you want to plug?
Not currently. My blog is pretty fully defunct. I'm going to be relaunching some of the features from the blog on chess.com sites soon. I'm coming out. Prodigy Watch is going to be back on Chess Kid very soon. I just have to finish editing on the article for the March update, and I'll be able to get my relaunch up. But all the old stuff that used to be on my blog is probably never going to be updated on that website again, but is coming back elsewhere. But Twitter's kind of pretty much it right now. If I have stuff anywhere else, I'll announce it on Twitter.
Oh, cool. And you guys, Ty will most likely be the Wizard of Oz behind the new rating conversion table. It's going to come out sometime. Sometime. Well, maybe by 3.0, we might have to delay it just to let the chips fall a little bit further, too. Yeah.
All right, thanks y'all. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. Take care.